Well, good afternoon, ladies. Today we're in Lesson 13, Ecclesiastes 6, verses 1 through 12. I think it would be good to start by just asking ourselves the question, is life a dead-end street? Sometimes it seems to be, especially when we don't reach our goals or when we reach our goals, but we don't feel fulfilled in our achievement. There's just no satisfaction in our soul. Perhaps the basic problem is that life confronts us with too many mysteries we can't fathom and too many puzzles we can't solve. For life to be satisfying, it has to make sense or we get frustrated. In this chapter, Solomon discussed a few of life's mysteries. And the first is found in verses 1 through 6, so let's read them. And then we'll find out what he was saying. Verse 1 says, "There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it's common among men. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires, yet God does not give him power to eat of it, but a foreigner consumes it. This is vanity, and it's an evil affliction. If a man begets 100 children and lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with goodness, or indeed he has no burial, I say that a stillborn child is better than he. For it comes in vanity and departs in darkness, and its name is covered with darkness. Though it has not seen the sun or known anything, this has more rest than that man. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice, but has not seen goodness, do not all go to one place?" On verse 1, we're reminded that the preacher still speaks from his under-the-sun premise. While he mentions God, he has no eternal perspective in mind. In these verses, we have the mystery of riches without satisfaction. Solomon saw the tragedy of those who are given great gifts from God, yet they do not have the opportunity to enjoy what God gives. Solomon understood this to be vanity and an evil affliction. There is no satisfaction in the wealth accumulated. The preacher knew that a man could have all the outward signs of a good life, but still not be satisfied with goodness. In verses 3 through 6, we have a hypothetical case of a person having 100 children and perhaps living 2,000 years. The preacher's exaggerating in order to make his point. No matter how much you possess, if you don't possess the power to enjoy it, you might just as well never to have been born. Or here, Solomon even says, it might be better for you to have been stillborn. Tragic as it is, he's saying it's better off than the man who knows the crushing disappointment of the realization of the meaninglessness of a wealthy life. Then he goes on to say in verses 7 through 9, "All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the soul is not satisfied. For what more has the wise man than the fool? What does the poor man have who knows how to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind." Here, Solomon switches to the poor man now, who works for the very bread he eats. Yet it does not satisfy his soul either. In verse 8, wisdom itself can't fill a hungry man's stomach. For all the superiority of the wise man compared to the fool, they both get hungry. Being wise isn't as much of an advantage as commonly thought. In verse 9, the preacher knew that in a world of such uncertainty and absence of meaning, what one can actually see is always better than what one merely desires. In a nutshell, in these three verses, we have the mystery of labor without satisfaction. Then Solomon turns to questions about life that seemingly have no answers. In verse 10, he says, "Whatever one is, he has been named already, for it is known that he is man, and he cannot contend with him who is mightier than he." When he says, "whatever one is, he has been named already," we see here a fatalistic view of God's sovereignty, the idea that God is completely in control, and whatever one is, it's because the all-powerful God has named it already. Solomon's great frustration is rooted in the understanding that man is man, God is God, and man can never successfully contend with him who is mightier than he. In verse 11, he says, since there are many things that increase vanity, how is man better? The preacher felt that life was a game that could not be won. There were too many things that increase vanity that ultimately man could become no better. G. Campbell Morgan says here, evidently the thought of the preacher is that the more a man possesses under the sun, the more profoundly conscious does he become of the vanity and vexation of it all. Verse 12, he says, for who knows what's good for man in life? All the days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow, who can tell a man what will happen after him under the sun? We often think we know what's good for us, but do we really? In the course of life, which is better, wealth or poverty, health or sickness, fame or obscurity? Many who have what is commonly thought of as good are not better off for it. Solomon looked to life, and it seemed vain and a shadow. He looked to death and saw only darkness and uncertainty. To this point, there's little relief from the tragedy of the meaninglessness of life and death under the sun. In verse 6, he says, do not all go to one place. Well, we can explain here Solomon's lack of knowledge of the afterlife by understanding the principle of 2 Timothy 2, verse 10. That Jesus Christ brought life and immortality to light through the gospel. The understanding of immortality was at best cloudy in the Old Testament, but it's much clearer in the New Testament. For example, we can say that Jesus knew fully what he was talking about when he described hell and judgment, such as the verses in Matthew 25, verses 41 through 46. Check those out when you have a moment. But we therefore rely on the New Testament for our understanding of the afterlife much more than the Old. We also understand that it does not in any way take away from the truth of the Bible and the book of Ecclesiastes. What's true is that Solomon actually wrote this and actually believed it with his under-the-sun premise. And the truth of the statement itself must be evaluated according to the rest of the Bible. In conclusion, probably the most profound insight in this chapter is verse 7. All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the soul is not satisfied. That's because man does not live by bread alone, Matthew 3, verse 4. There is much more to life than what one eats or drinks, but only when God and eternity are in the picture. This chapter is another bitter indictment of life under the sun. What good is it to have lived if we have found no satisfaction in life or honor when we die? But the Christian should have a proper perspective. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all things necessary for life will be added. Matthew 6:33. The ability to enjoy life, whether rich or poor, comes from within. It does not come from circumstances. We must believe like Paul, I've learned in whatsoever state I'm in to be content. And then later in that same chapter of Philippians, he says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Life with Jesus is meaningful and full of purpose. Let's be satisfied. You can get the notes for this study at naomistable.com.